everyone. Welcome back to Pencils and Lipstick. This is episode 227, and I'm Kat Caldwell, your hostess. And today I have an interview with Jean Blasberg. We are going to talk about her latest book, Daughter of Promise. And I really enjoyed this conversation. I know I say that about every conversation that I have with people. But Jean Blasberg writes literary fiction. And so anybody who is thinking you want to go more the literary fiction route, I think that Jean has a lot of information for you, a lot of advice for you. Her way of going about writing is different from what I've heard other people say. She took some classes that she talks about. I have all those links in the show notes below because she was sweet enough to send them to me. And at the end, she mentions Grub Street. I later say Grub Hub. That's not the same thing. So I put the links in the show notes below as well. I recommend that you get her books. You know, when you're a writer, okay, I'll say this. Whatever you're writing, whether it's genre fiction, whether it's literary fiction, you should have themes to your books. And you should not shy away from themes that interest you, because I think that the reader sees if you're bored or not. And if you want really rich characters, even if they're fighting aliens or if they are fighting the big bad wolf of Wall Street, they need substance to them. They need your interest and your beliefs and other belief systems that you have investigated in order for them to be really relatable. And relatable, not meaning that the reader agrees with everything that your character does, but relatable as a human being and as somebody that they've probably met at some point in their life, right? So I would take a listen to this episode and understand that even if you aren't writing literary fiction, that a lot of what Jean has to say translates into genre fiction. Remember that before the Kindle, while we still had genres, writers were still writing about the world and society and themes that interested them, right? So before we decided to have a million different, you know, branched off genres, and everything was kind of under just general fiction, right? Even if it was a mystery, if it was a thriller, if it was horror, if it was sci-fi, a lot of the sci-fi writers were writing commentary on society at large. And so they were taking their beliefs and what they're seeing and taking those themes of the past and what they saw the future might be and putting them into the context of their story. So don't shy away from the word theme when she says it. That's all I want to say. Okay. So it is coming to the end of April. It's finally warming up here in Virginia, so I'm excited about that. May is going to be a jam-packed month. I am actually leaving in just 2 weeks for Cuba for a humanitarian trip with a Christian group. We're going to be working at a clinic, and I am super excited about that. So the episodes going out will be kind of pre-recorded and set up. You know, I kind of pre-record anyway in advance, but those will definitely be sort of timed out there. But if you guys want to follow a little bit of what I'm doing, I probably won't post pictures about Cuba until after we are home. That is just for safety of the people that we are going to go work with. But I will post a couple things, especially to my newsletter. So again, the links are in the show notes below. Sign up for my newsletter if you're a writer. Sign up for the writer's newsletter. If you're a reader, sign up for that one. If you're both, sign up for both. I'll probably share a little bit more, a lot more on the newsletters than I will be sharing in social media. Again, just for safety of the people who we are helping out, right? Lots of things are happening in this world, and there are sort of rules around that. And keep that in mind if ever you want to go on a humanitarian effort to keep your social media like confined. Anyway, that has nothing to do with writing. So let's get into the episode and listen to Jean Blasberg talk about her latest book, Daughter of a Promise. All right. Today I have with me Jean Blasberg. Thank you for coming and joining us on the show, Jean.
Thanks, Kat. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you because I was looking at this latest book that you have, Daughter of Promise. It sounds really intriguing. But before we get into that book and the other books that you have, would you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a 58-year-old mother of three grown children. I am an athlete, and I have lived in the Northeast for a good chunk of my life, but recently moved to Park City, Utah for part of the year and spend a lot of time on a farm we recently purchased.
Oh, wow.
In Madison, Wisconsin.
No
So
way.
I kind of had one of those blow up moments during COVID and decided to make some major changes. But luckily writing is transportable.
Yes, this is true. What did your children think about this? Are they anywhere close to those two places?
My three children are in Brooklyn, New York, and
Okay.
they are a wonderful unit of three and do a lot of things together. And our family has a tradition of going to Rhode Island in the summer. So that
Okay.
tradition stays intact. And I just kind of come in as a house guest as well to that tradition as opposed to hosting it. But yeah, we still spend a lot of time together as a family, the three
That's
of
nice.
them, and then they love to come to Park City. So that
Of
was
course.
for them not a bad place for their parents to move.
What they think about Madison, Wisconsin, that seems like a bit of a random place.
Yeah, well, I think they're really proud of the mission. We are getting into this regenerative food movement and converting a traditional, conventional chemical, a farm that did not use regenerative practices or organic
Okay.
practices to grow vegetables for human consumption.
Okay.
And, we're getting the food out there to people who need it. It's not just the 1% who can afford farm to table, say. So I think our kids are pretty proud that mom and dad are venturing into a new business, when a lot of our friends are playing golf and
Yes.
hanging out at the beach.
Yeah, this conversation, I swear, we'll get back to books, but I was talking to a friend of mine. We both grew up in the country. I actually grew up outside of Madison, Wisconsin, about 30 miles,
Oh,
so
you
up
must
north.
know Verona. That's where
Yeah,
we are.
you're in Verona. So I'm on the other side. I was from DeForest. And we were talking about how real food used to be cheap, like inaccessible. And now we're both in outside of DC, and it is not cheap and it is not accessible. And not even it's not even good food that's also expensive. Like it seems so backwards to how we grew up. We're like, going to the co-op was like what poor people did. That's what we drove up and like women in long skirts and handkerchiefs in their hair would, stick food in our cars. And now it's like the posh thing to do, and now people can't afford it. It seems so backwards in
Well, we have a lot in common then. That's kind of why we got into this.
That's good.
I think people who grow up in the city have this romantic idea of farm or rural life, and I'm quickly learning it is hard work and
Yes.
it makes me feel like I have a purpose every morning, but
Yeah,
my muscles
that's cool.
hurt and my back hurts and it's
Yes.
hot. So anyway,
Yes.
I feel like it's an exciting new change though and
Yeah,
challenge.
that is very exciting. Okay. So how then do you fit that into How do you fit your writing into caring for this farm?
Yeah, so the farm came into our lives. We found this piece of property. We'd been looking for a little bit, but 2022 is when we bought the farm. So we're just going into
Okay.
our second growing season. And, this really shines a light on how long the publishing queue is for novels. But the book Daughter of a Promise, which is out,
Yep.
is brand new, was finished and in the can and kind of off being marketed when we bought the farm. So in a way,
Okay.
once the things got hot and heavy with the farm, I was following up with a lot of revisions and things like that. But I wasn't in that space where I was trying to create something new.
Great.
And the balance has worked well. Even though there's a lot going on the farm, I find that like I don't really have a social life there when I'm there, and I have a lot of free time to do like deep thinking.
That's true, yeah.
now, like, it doesn't really matter. I don't know where I am. It's kind of where I am in the cycle of the writing. So
Yeah.
the cycle of the writing hit well with the farm. You know, I still write a little. I write every day, and I'm working on a new piece, but I do think it's getting a little short shrift because of the farm stuff.
Okay.
But you know, there'll be a time when the farm is a little bit more like on its own. Or not on its own, but you know, I'm not in such a supervisory role and so hands-on that I can step back. But I do see my future works really incorporating some of what I'm learning, and also just the journey on the farm. Maybe my next piece or my next longer piece might be a bit of a memoir about my relationship with food, transparency in our food system, and why we decided to do this and the challenges.
Yeah,
So
that would be really interesting.
So anyway, I think I typically incorporate what's going on in my life somehow in my writing.
Sure.
And when your life is interesting and full of new characters, it gives you good
Yes.
things to write about.
That's so true. We have to leave our houses, don't we, in order to really expand.
That's why I also think, you know, I look at people who have these ambitions of publishing at an early age, and my first novel was published when I was like in my early 50s, and I feel like, well, I mean, even though I'd started writing it a long time, 10 years before that, I feel like life experience and just like emotional intelligence and all that goes with having lived a few decades is pretty helpful, and especially when it comes to writing novels and rich
Yes.
characters.
Yeah, I think especially with the characters, right? I think you can tell just in how developed characters are and the emotional responses that they might have or
Yeah, my book club one time hosted a young author whose book was fabulous, but two characters were in like a 30-year marriage, and some of the things that they have, their strategies for resolving things and their relationship. My friends and I all looked at this young woman and we were like, that we're not buying this at all.
You
But you
shouldn't
know,
have
what did she
us.
know about a 30-year marriage, you know, at that stage?
Yeah,
So
that's true. But that's a good reminder to authors to and writers to get out there and talk to people. Like if you have a character that's much older than you, you should probably go talk to people who have lived that long and make sure they're going to react that way, you know, 'cause we do, we change, don't we? We like a mom who's 20 is definitely different than a mom who's 40. Like that's just
Absolutely.
maturity,
Absolutely.
hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And just the way that we're going to react and have patience or no patience too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So when you started writing, you said you started writing years before your first one got published, but what made you write? Have you always been a writer? Have you always wanted to write a novel?
Yeah, well, I can go back to like my earliest days. I've always had a very active imagination, and I think that comes from being, well, I'm an only child and I did play by myself a lot, and I had imaginary friends up until a very embarrassing age. But I wrote stories and wrote, you know, made little books when I was a little girl. I've always loved to write. I was in kind of on a creative writing track in college, but then decided that I really wanted to live in New York City and be able to support myself and not have to ask my parents for any support. So I went into investment banking. And that was completely not something I had been like. I went to a liberal arts college, a small liberal arts college, and majored in art history and American studies and art history. So anyway, that was kind of an unexpected leap for everybody who knew me. But it was like this moment of being like really practical and really worried about being able to support myself. That job turned into a job in a big department store company in Cincinnati, which then, when I moved to Boston, turned into a job working for a professor of retailing at Harvard Business
Okay.
School. The Harvard Business School method is case studies. So I was writing the case studies for his class.
Oh,
And
interesting.
yeah, I had like this knowledge of retailing from my role at the department store company, and it really worked well. And it was this job where I was being paid to write cases that were, they had to be at entertaining because these students had to read five a night, or
Oh
between
my
three and five a
gosh.
night. Yeah. So they had to be a certain length. They had to be entertaining. There was a protagonist in terms of like the corporate, what the corporate problem was. There was usually a person involved. There was a problem, a conflict. And then you kind of
Okay.
left it open-ended so that that was what led into the class discussion.
Right, okay.
I really loved doing it. And I also really loved the lifestyle because by that time I had three little kids, and they were three kids in 4 years. And I was able to kind of balance this writing and, somewhat be present with them during the day.
Right.
I think I was always tired. The professor I worked for retired, and I kind of transitioned to just focusing on my kids full time. My husband's job was one that c required a lot of travel, so we made a deal that both of us couldn't have like a lot of pressure in our work.
Right.
And I was like, I think this writing thing is the way I want to go. And we were raising our kids in downtown Boston, and I was able to continue. Once I ha started having some babysitters, I'd go to classes at night, Harvard Extension School, Cambridge School for Adult Education, so much great around both, journalism or short story writing or personal essays. And I got really hooked on this
Yeah.
class called Writing from Your Own Experience. It was at the Cambridge School for Adult Education, and it was taught by a woman named Mopsy Strange Kennedy, who was kind of a local celebrity, having written for like the Improper Bostonian, The Globe. She's worked at a lot of
Right.
magazines, and it was this kind of class that you take and you feel lucky to get in. And every 10 weeks, when registration opened again, everyone in the class would sign up really fast so no one else
Oh,
could
really?
get in. So I feel like I was with these people for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And every essay prompt Mopsy gave us, it could be like, walk down your sidewalk and see what's on your neighbor's front porch, and then write a story about what you see, or write a story about the trees on your walk. And every time I'd come back, and my essay would wind its way back to me and my mother and something about my mother. So it became very obvious I had, it was great I was taking this class, but I had things to work out.
Yeah.
And I also started seeing themes in what I was really interested in terms of the relationships between the generations, between
Oh, interesting.
children and parents, and children and grandparents, and a lot to do with what you subconsciously inherit, and
Okay.
patterns and secrets and misunderstandings, and how resentments might get built up. And I had this idea for a novel. So this would have been in like my early to mid 40s. And I thought, nobody wants to read about me and my family, but I think I could create a fictional family
Right.
that, if I have everybody be the right age and born in the right year, I could kind of create just this cacophony of these issues. And
Right.
I could maybe display these themes that I'm so interested in the story of a family that's kind of undergoing like a real crisis moment in the year 2000, with everything coming to a head. And so I worked on that for a long time, and that's the novel called Eden, which was published in 2017. But while I was working on it, and people were helping, and I was taking classes along the way, I'd get a lot of feedback that this is really ambitious. Like, your writing is
Oh,
great,
really?
but like all these generations of women in this long time frame, it's really ambitious. I don't know. It's a lot for your first novel, and the plot's not
Okay.
quite there. There's not a lot of action. just a lot of interiority with these women and these mothers and these daughters. And anyway, I felt like that was valid feedback, and I put it on a shelf. And I had this other story burning inside of me that was really action-packed. And at that point, my kids were at this age where I was sending them off in the world, and our eldest son had gone to boarding school, and the younger two decided they wanted to go to boarding school, and they all went to different schools. So here I am hearing these stories about all these different schools. And at the same time, there was news coming out in the Boston Globe about sexual impropriety and awful things that had been covered up in different boarding
Right.
schools in New England over decades. And it
Right.
was awful. And here I am, this mom, thinking she was giving her kids this amazing opportunity to go to these great elite schools. And I still think they got great educations, but I had this story burning inside me. So it's the story of a mother and a son, but the son gets wrapped up in a secret society, and there's a crime going on at a school, and he's kind of made the scapegoat. So
Oh,
the
no.
yeah. But anyway, so that's my second novel called The Nine. And when I was writing that, the same teachers were like, "This is great. This is an amazing, fast-paced,
Okay.
so you should get this published first. Forget about those four generations of women." But in my head, I was like, if I'm going to get anything published, it is, I've got to go back to that first novel and work on it some more, now that I kind of know how to write a little more
Right.
action and get a plot put together.
Right.
So anyway, that's a really long, drawn out story, but I do think that I draw on what's going on in my life to really
Right.
the emote, like the nine, it has a lot of action, but in the end, I think it's really the story of a mother and son and their evolving relationship as she's kind of, he's her whole world and she's his whole world, and then he leaves and they both have to like figure out
Right.
their own stuff.
Yeah. And then you have to figure out, is he the person you thought he was? And it, I mean, that sounds really intriguing, but I think it's interesting too how I think many writers draw off of their own lives, right? But it's interesting what you're saying, how you're going to these classes and you have this idea, but it actually takes sometimes a long time for that idea to germinate and like become something that can be a book, right? Like this
Absolutely.
idea is sometimes not enough.
You may have heard this this adage that memoirists write what was real and then kind of make meaning of it and draw the themes out. And I think novelists come into it, into a project with themes they're really interested in, and have to create like a real story in order to explore those themes. And
Right.
so I always had like these ideas of great themes and great characters, but I needed that scaffolding of story and to understand how to keep the pacing and the interest level up around stuff happening. And I always felt like I was really good at or I am, I think, good at dialogue and subtext and the interplay between two people on the page. But that's not, you can't just hang a novel on that, that people
Right.
expect to be turning the page to see what happens. And then all of the richness that you bring to your characters is what makes it, you finish the book and you're like, oh my gosh, I feel like I kind of know these people. I was inside their head.
Right.
But you can't just last for 300 pages
Yeah.
on the interpersonal relationships. So what I
Yeah, it's
really
kind of
learned was the
what you were working on before with the professor probably really like brought out that natural talent in you, where you're bringing to the page that the interpersonal relationships, because then you need the class to talk about what is ethical, right? And what is happening in the
yeah, well,
business world. And
I'll have to
you can.
say, like those cases maybe were 4 pages. We didn't get too
Right.
deep into people's like motivation and everything, but we did try to make them as dense and rich as possible.
Right.
And the professor I worked for, his name was Walter Salmon, and what he really taught me was great editing skills, how to
Right.
say things clearly and concisely and not repeat yourself. And
Yeah.
so I'm pretty good at getting down to a word count.
Yeah, having a pretty clean manuscript to, which is like a lot of these are all things that we have to learn, right? In some way or another. When you decide that you have a story to tell and you want to write it, I mean, we either get the feedback from the editor, or we get the feedback from the agent or the reader, you know, and like that would be the last place you want to get it from, really. Like we want them to like the book, but we definitely don't want them to be like, this could be 40,000 words shorter, like that. No, we don't want that to. But these are all things we need to learn: the story, the plot, the scaffolding, as you call it, the interpersonal relationships, the dialogue. It's so much, right? Like a whole novel is a lot.
It's a long process, and a teacher I had a few years ago said writing a novel is the most inefficient thing you'll ever do. It's like time isn't linear in terms of when things come to you, and every edit and pass through the novel, you are changing things, hopefully for the better. You will write a new ending, which then says, I need a new beginning, and then you redo that, and you have a story, but you have all sorts of choices around how it's going to be revealed and at what point you're going to start the action, how much is in flashback, how much is in the present. It's a multitude of choices, and it's kind of fun. But it is, for me, it takes a really long time.
Yeah, I think you also said in the very beginning, like you now get that time to think. And I think that's really important. And I've been talking about that for probably a year and a half now. Like, even with all the things going on constantly in the world, and probably with your second book, The Nine, with all that was probably pretty stressful to be hearing stories and to have your kids out of the house and all that. You have to give yourself time to think and process as a writer. Otherwise, it's not going to come together how it could, you know, unless if you don't give yourself that time. So
I do.
this,
Yeah,
go
I think
ahead.
I do benefit from enjoying being alone.
Yes. I think all of us are slightly introvert. We just need to like use that time. But I'm assuming then Daughter of Promise is based a little bit off of your life because she goes to Wall Street. And you worked in finance as well. So is that true? Is it based a little bit on your first job out of college?
I wanted to be, yes. And I always pictured writing something about those years because, boy, were they filled with jaw-dropping moments. And that feeling of being in over your head that I don't think was unique to me. It's probably that first big job feeling. But I have to go back to another. I just want to back up to something that I find really interesting and what has become a theme in my books. And it's not necessary for the readers to be kind of on the same page at all. But my first book is called Eden, which you can guess from the title is kind of a reflection on paradise. And it has to do with this summer home that this family has kind of made sacred for them. And the Nine is actually based, it's launched off of, and this is in the epigraph, so you kind of are set up for it when you start to read the book. But in the book of Samuel, there was a woman named Hannah, and she was infertile and prayed to the Lord for a child. And if she were to bear a son, she would turn him over to the temple when he was weaned. And in a way, and so I named my characters Hannah and Sam. And it's that feeling of trust in an institution and that feeling of wanting a child so much and being judged on whether you are fertile or barren. And it kind of goes back to some ancient constructs around women and their fertility. But I was interested on playing off of that as kind of turning her into this modern helicopter mom. So now with Daughter of a Promise, I've also borrowed, this time I've borrowed way more closely to the plot of a biblical story. It is the love story of David and Bathsheba. And you can call it a love story, you can call it non-consensual relationship or consensual, but they do eventually marry and have a child named Solomon, who becomes the next king of Israel after David. And
Right.
so my protagonist is named Bethsabe. The book is set in 2019 and 2020. She is writing this book from, the book is told in the form of a letter she is writing at some point in the future to her unborn son named Sol, which is Spanish for sun, or the most, or the most fiery star in the sky is what she says. But she's now looking back at this year in her life where everything changed for her. She started this job. She fell in love a couple of times. She COVID hit.
Right.
I don't want to give it away what else happens, but big stuff happens to her, and then she suffers great loss and tragedy. And so the theme of the book is really, you think you're going to learn everything there is to know in New York City, big skyscrapers, sexy job, all this important power and money flying around. But in the end, what the wisdom she realizes she wants to pass down in this letter is everything she learned from her mother and grandmother in Miami. So it's a coming of age story. It's kind of a unorthodox love story, I like to say. And it's the story of a young woman and her empowerment and realizing that the people who raised her really did know everything, even though she
Yeah.
felt like she had to go beyond her family and her roots in order to learn how to be an adult. So I really love the book. I worked on it during COVID, therefore COVID and the domestic drama that happened during COVID, like those early months.
Yes.
And you might recognize, we all will recognize kind of the rituals we all went through with the food and the mail and going outside and everything. I don't know, this is a young woman who is from a town, from Little Havana, and of Cuban American descent. So not my background and my culture, but definitely I infused her with the feeling of I've got to work really hard to do this job. And so she's feels a little behind the eight ball when she starts,
Right.
but she works so hard, she ends up being kind of the star of her training class. And then yeah, a lot of stuff happens, and it just does bring you back at any age to those times when you're feeling a little vulnerable and ill-prepared and looking for a mentor.
Right.
In her case, she's also been raised without a father, so she's subconsciously always looking for that father figure in her life. And so I would say that if you knew the story of David and Bathsheba and you read this novel, you'd have a lot of fun Easter eggs. You'd be like, oh wow, that's a great way to do this, or that's a great way to do
Right.
that. So I could fall back on that as my plot, which I really find to be useful. I think retellings are an amazing opportunity to just show the timeless nature of the human condition and our emotions around love and desire and needing to belong. They've been that way since the Old Testament was written. And
Right.
we're, anyhow, so I will say, yes, Betsabe has some of my what I remember feeling, and some of the characters may have been easy to write because I remember seeing people just like that. But in
Right.
terms of the plot, no, I didn't
No.
do some of the things she did.
We always have to like caveat for anyone who knows us. Like sometimes people who aren't writers assume everything we write is exactly what happens in our life. And no, when we say, you draw from
Oh,
experiences, doesn't mean
exactly.
that you. Why did you choose Cuban descent? Was that just something that sort
Yeah,
of came
that's a great
about?
question. So, I wanted Betsabe to be from a culture that had like a really strong family,
Mm.
have tight families from a really tight community with a sense of ambition and upward mobility and have the support of that family. I also wanted her grandmother, who is named Yaya, her Yaya, which is not that unusual, but to have kind of a mystical Santeria-ish religion, kind of like a certain a religious belief that was really connected to nature and connected to the ocean and the sky and the earth. And because this comes from a story based in kind of the Jewish Bible and her boss is Jewish, there are a lot of things that I've always learned about and read about as being similar between Cubans and Jews in terms of
Okay.
exile, hard work,
That makes
and
sense.
arriving in communities and kind of creating ghettos of their own people. So there was that commonality that I wanted my two main characters to have. I also pictured my Betsabe as incredibly beautiful and entering this world not as a because we're in a place in time in 2019 where DEI is valued, but she was showing up feeling ill prepared for the job, feeling like she had darker skin than others, feeling like she had a first name people couldn't pronounce that well. And so I find I really love this outsider's point of view. And I also wanted her to be, I just wanted her to feel somewhat foreign in this world. Foreign, but not foreign. She's a second generation Cuban. Her mother was born in America. It was her grandparents who came from Havana right after the revolution. So I don't know. I from the very beginning, I had this idea. And it was probably based, now that I'm going back to the very first drafts of it, there was a woman I worked with who was Cuban American, and she told me a lot of, we talked a lot about her family. And I think that really influenced
Influenced a bit,
these ideas as well.
there's it's curious because in America you have certain communities that have really held on to past traditions. It d doesn't really matter how many generations away they are from the people who have, like, the Irish American. I think of the, in the Midwest, you think it's been probably 200 years since you've arrived here, but they keep their traditions, and so that's really fun. And then there's kind of like, I always tell everyone I'm a mutt. I have no idea where I'm from or what I didn't have like that community. So it's always interesting to investigate people who come from those communities or who can switch like from city to city. Like
Well, I
she's
think we're a country that does have and I have to say, Kat, I'm just like you. I've moved all over the place, and I don't have that a strong connection to place in terms of my lineage. But we are a country that does have all these pockets, and we're we're a country made of immigrants. And we're out here in Utah and we go to dinner and we drive through a little town that's like little Switzerland. And you're like, well, you can see how Swiss people would come to this valley with the mountains all around and settle here. But I think we are also in a place and time where people are always straddling multiple worlds. So, like you said, you're in one place, but you can easily switch to another. Like, I did want my main character to have her feet in two worlds with a Spanish, even with language, Spanish and English, or she's from a very, politically conservative family showing up in New York with best friends who's very liberal. And so there's political, trying to figure out where do I fit. And she's also trying to, she sees all these different versions of feminism. And she's like, I understand that word, but I don't know how it applies to my life and how I am a feminist. Is just being here being a feminist? And so she's struggling kind of. I remember in my 20s, all of these kind of identities that people could take for granted, you kind of have this opportunity to decide, is this the flag I'm going to wave? Is this the flag I'm going to wave? Like, who am I going to be? Am I, what am I going to stand for? And I wanted her to be at that point in life where she had Both the foreign and the familiar and the unfamiliar and the and she didn't quite have the confidence to know that being both is like super powerful and you can be both.
Right.
And she was at that point where she was feeling like she had to be one or the other.
Yeah.
And in the end, she realizes she's a lot of things. And as a growing woman and an adult, you realize you hold a lot of things. You don't
Yes.
just say you're just not settling for one thing.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too that you're telling the story from her point of view as an older woman, right? So if you wrote it from the point of view of her in that moment, it would be a bit different because you feel so lost, right? And I think the time, the year that you chose too is interesting because that the generation they have they've labels have never been like so embraced
Right.
except for by this younger generation, which is very
Exactly.
strange because like our generations were like, we don't want labels. Like, it's a
Right. We
very
fought
strange
for all this
pressure.
liberation and equality and
Yes.
agency around our sexual lives,
Yes.
only to be in a generation that defines people, and it's a sexual encounter is either consensual or unconsensual or appropriate
Right.
or inappropriate, and
Right.
there's so much gray. So there's a so a couple things I wanted to say. First, she is writing this letter from the future, but not as a much older woman, maybe
Okay.
closer to 30,
Okay.
because she says right in the beginning, I need to get this down while it's still fresh in my memory. And people have written their own version of the story, but mine's never been out there. So in the Bible, it's all written,
Right.
as it pertains to David. Although she's writing it, I do that balance where you're writing, but you're also going back into scenes. So you can experience what was in Bethsabé's head as that 22, 23-year-old young woman. There's the you do feel like you're in the present and it's not all being told. So I that was a little bit of tricky writing that you
Yeah,
have
I
to
bet.
make sure that works. And then I forgot what the last thing is I was gonna say, but sorry.
That's all right.
I was
We
trying
can.
to answer a lot of questions at once, and that's what happens when you're 58. You can't hold it all anymore.
Think still like we change so much between 22 and 30 that there's a lot that's going on, right? And if you're thrown into a world where you think you're an adult, you feel like you're an adult, everyone tells you you're an adult, but then you go into an adult's world, like you're going to go through a lot of change in a very short amount of time, right? So to be able to have captured that is impressive. So I'm excited to read this book. How has it been? Because you say that it is a coming of age tale and it's based a lot on David and Bathsheba. Has there been any, have you received any pushback, I guess, from, because like, I mean, David and Bathsheba is a well-known tale, but it's like a couple paragraphs, right? And there's a lot of opinion about it. And it's really only told as like one of David's greatest sins, right? Because I mean, in the Bible, he kills off Bathsheba's husband, right? So he makes a decision that makes him make worse
Or bad
decisions.
decisions,
More bad
exactly.
decisions that he really has to atone for it. So has there been any sort of like
Yeah, so my first thing I want to say is exactly, I'm really impressed that you know the storyline. And it's only a couple of paragraphs, and we never know anything about what's
her
going on
point
in
of view, right?
Bathsheba's head. Yeah, her husband gets killed, she loses her baby, she's forced, she marries this king. But none of her thoughts are on the page. And so that was part of my inspiration. And also, you read that story, and it's all about consent. And I was like, that is such a modern topic. And we've been and we have been grappling with what is consent for thousands of years. So that was part of my inspiration too. When I started marketing and pitching this book, I did get the feedback, don't mention the word Bible. Don't mention Bible at all,
That's very
because
interesting.
people will think this is a religious book and it
Okay.
has to do with like a religious dogma. And even friends recently at a dinner, someone said, "That's so interesting. You bring your faith into and work it into the plot." And I'm like, "It's not my faith. Yes, I'm Jewish, but I read the Old Testament as a foundational text, as an early piece of our civilization's narrative and like how we told stories." And so the retelling is like I'm trying to make a point about the timelessness of these issues, about how we haven't made a whole lot of progress, of how we relate to each other in 2,000 years, whether it's progress or you don't have to call it that. But that's really I'm retelling for all sorts of reasons because I want to show what the woman's point of view might have been. But yeah, the pushback is really not to talk about the Bible.
That's
Kirkus
interesting.
gave it a wonderful review, and part of their pull quote was like a sagacious retelling of a biblical love story. And that's now I use that pull quote, so I'm actually saying screw it, I'm just going to use the word biblical. But I haven't gotten any pushback that I know of. There
That's
could
good.
be some, bias out there against biblical stories, against Jewish stories, against anything like that. I suspect there might be, but nobody's actually said anything to my face. And to tell you the truth, I got into this whole enterprise because I love it. I love my imaginary world and I love expressing myself in words. And the commercial side is important to me only to the extent I find readers who enjoy my books and I can interact with them, whether it's four readers or like 400,000. I mean, I've never experienced the 400,000 side, so I'm not saying like that wouldn't be cool, but I definitely see my success as having finished the books, having gotten them out there, and having attracted a decent readership that are intelligent, well-read people who find pleasure in talking about these kind of themes about the relationships.
I love that. And I think whether you pull it from any historical context or myths, like you said before, stories are timeless. And the idea of men and women and love and consent, I think we'll be talking about that for years because, like, as we just said, this generation's grappling with it again, when we thought that it was already put together, so
Right. Yeah.
every generation is grappling with what is, and then looking at the past and being like, what was and what could be and what were their circumstances. So I think it's, I would encourage people to not shy away from looking at historical context stories to find their plot lines and to, to sort of
Yeah.
take them as a basis,
Yeah,
but
I'm actually going to teach a session at the Muse in the Marketplace in Boston this May. Called Making Ancient Stories Your Own,
I love that, yeah.
and drawing on just the rich history of retellings. I love that there, even if it's a retelling of Mark Twain,
Yeah.
of Jane Austen, retellings of Shakespeare. There's so many great retellings of mythology, and those are
Totally.
done for a reason, right? We're poking at the perspective that may have been written then, bringing in a new perspective. We are maybe, I don't know, we're giving the main character a different gender or age or nationality and playing with that. It's being done in the theater all the time as well. I think we are recognizing there's just so many plots in this world,
Right.
and to retell and give a twist to things. Like even the retellings of Little Red Riding Hood. I have some components of Little Red Riding Hood in this novel as well. I feel like that's another one of our culture's great myths. The Little Red Riding Hood in the end of the fairy tale gets eaten by the big bad wolf, and then a huntsman comes by and cuts open the wolf's stomach and sets free Little Red and her grandmother. And in mine, like, yeah, we don't need the huntsman, and my little red is pretty wary of seeing this wolf that she's living with, or or you know, who can be a wolf anyway.
I love that. And I think that will also make our stories richer to not sort of deny our past. 'Cause like, even if you come possibly if, like grew up like me or like you, where you don't have the full community or maybe the folklore, the community folklore behind it, the country that you like, America has a lot of folklore, Europe has a lot of folklore, Asia, Africa, you can look beyond those, and it's good to enrich your imagination, right? Because you're not going to copy it, you're going to make it your own.
Well, you're a writer, Kat. It's so intellectually fulfilling, I think, to think of your work in conversation with other work. I mean, we sometimes are asked for comps, right? And that's more of a process of like what's out there in the market that our book is most like that's recent. But I have this whole bookshelf of friends here of think of writers and books I admire so much. And if I could think that my sensibilities are somewhat an interplay or in conversation or have been affected by my reading of something else or are you know, have biblical allusions like so many of the greatest works. Like you just go to John Steinbeck and East of Eden, and then you go boom, the very like the magnus opus of biblical retellings. To think that, you know, if you're going to leave some work and books behind after you die, that they're rich with symbolism and connecting to past works and a little bit of your own life. And, you know, Bette's kind of giving her pearls of wisdom to her son and leaving. I don't know. I feel like I really try to incorporate a lot of things that make this whole endeavor not of writing worthwhile, but of publishing it and feeling like it's worth putting out into the world and my time promoting it. And, just the paper that it's written on, to tell you the truth. I just want to make it as really complex as possible. So.
I love that. I love rich books. I have that entire shelf there is my all my favorite books. And honestly, one of my favorite books is The Red Tent, which is a biblical retelling from the woman's point of view.
Anita
So
DeMont. And the one thing I would say that makes it distinctly different is that she set Dina in the time in the Red Tent,
yeah.
but Gabe told the story from her point of view.
Right,
As
right.
I'm taking Bathsheba, and now she's like a young college grad in 2019, lo
Right.
living in the Lower East Side and working on
It's a little
Wall
bit different.
Street. Yeah, having
But see,
avocado toast and
yes,
frittatas, you know, it's
and
a
her
little
flat
different.
white, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But there's that's so many ways to retell it, right? And you don't even have to follow. You know, if you take the Greek myths or the Roman myths or the ancient, you know, I know one writer that's doing the, he's English and he's retelling the English myths set in that time. But you can take them and make them modern. That, like you were saying, any twist that you want, you can take them and twist them up into something else. And but it's the themes that are so intriguing to us, right? Like, what are the themes of love and consent and loss and despair and, you know, winning one over the other? Like, these are all human condition themes that are free for all of us to use, right? In any way that we want. So,
Absolutely.
this book is already out. I'm going to put the links in the show notes, but as this episode goes out, it has been published and people can order a copy of it. Is it going to come out in audio as well, or is
Yep,
that
it will be paperback, ebook, and audio on
awesome?
April 2nd. It'll be
Awesome.
available wherever books are sold.
Awesome. So before we finish, I have one more question for you. With all of the different classes that you took as you started to dive into writing, what would you suggest that, to somebody who wants to sort of start taking their ideas and putting them on paper? What was your favorite class that you would say, go find something like this?
Well, I guess the most important thing is what motivates you to write. So some classes have weekly deadlines of an essay, and that's helpful. If you like to write nonfiction personal essay, I can make a plug for an organization that's meant a lot to me and where I gained a lot of valuable teaching is Grub Street in Boston. And I went to the in-person classes, but since COVID, they've been offering so many wonderful online classes, and they have classes that are a few weeks up to a year long. So you can kind of figure out what time frame and what genre of writing works well for you.
Oh,
But what I
perfect.
would say is, if you don't have access to a class or can't afford that kind of time or money, it is still important to find a community of writers, because getting feedback along the way saves you a lot of time. It's good to get feedback as you're outlining and on page 75, as opposed to have spent 10 years and you've written like a billion words. Trust me, I know from my first novel. So finding a writing group is, actually heading to my writing group right now at the Park City Library as soon as this podcast is over. And I met, I've been out in this world a little, so it was easy for me to kind of tap into that group. But I've also made wonderful writing group friends through the classes I've taken. So I would have to say taking a class can often be the portal to a community. And I think that's really, really important, getting feedback. And then once you have a finished manuscript, or you've been really polishing it for a while, one thing I did that was amazing was a year-long program. It was a fellowship through Stony Brook called Bookends. But it doesn't have to be that, but it could be like a smaller cohortish, longer-term thing, where you both get the community and you get like a really like 12 months of holding your feet to the fire. I found that to be great. But I guess I don't want to intimidate anyone to think if I can't find a writing group or a class, I can't be a writer. However, there's so many things online, both live and webinars that are recorded, that there's really no excuse to not get some tutelage. And I think what people often, why they resist the tutelage is fear of criticism. So rejection and fear of criticism, it's like the first thing you have to shed.
Yes,
Um,
that's so
I
true.
don't I have this way of answering these questions really in a long way, but to be specific, I would look at the Grub Street website, and to be really general, I would just be like, find friends in a coffee shop or a library.
Well, because in your own story, getting feedback for Eden was very important to making it into what it was that then gave you confidence to write the nine. Like everything sort of comes, right? Once you sort of go get your first feedback. I remember being very nervous over getting my first feedback. And yeah, it's going to happen. But for the most part, writers want to see each other succeed. And so they're trying to portray convey their wisdom to the next
If you're lucky
next
enough
writer.
to be in a writing group where you have the opportunity to give feedback, that is a really growth, a great growth experience. You can see things in other people's writing that you deny exists in your own.
It's so true.
It's a very humbling experience to give someone else feedback and then realize you're doing the exact same thing. So I think that giving feedback is a privilege when somebody's willing to share their work with you and take your feedback. It's very, there's like this reciprocal generosity that's going on, and definitely giving feedback has helped me grow as a person and as a writer.
I think it helps us shed a bit of like, okay, we're not the only one who might do that or do this, so I love that feedback and that advice for people. So thank you, Jane, for coming on and talking to us. I'll have all the links in the show notes below, so for anyone who wants to order your book and read it and follow you and look at all the Grubhub, I'll get them from you in a second.
Well, wonderful. Thank you, Kat. This was so much fun. I really
Thanks.
appreciate it.